Well, welcome to this latest episode of the Forever Bristol City podcast. Disappointing in the end at Ashton Gate on Wednesday night because it finished City 1, Bournemouth 2. Joining me at the moment with further guests to come in. So if you're listening already, send a text and indeed try and dial in yourself. But joining me at the moment is Dave Fevs for the week night shift. Dave, any fanciful ideas we had of making a late surge for the playoff? That's well and truly gone now, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's always going to be a slim chance, wouldn't it? But yeah, I think that pretty much knocks it on the head tonight.
Yeah. Did you expect the lineup that was presented there? I mean, it was the team that finished the second half at the Liberty Stadium at the weekend.
I think you'd have done really well tonight to not pick that team. I think it was Perm 11 from 11, wasn't it? So, you know, I guess the only one that was maybe up for debate was whether Towler would start instead of Sessegnon like he did on Saturday. But no, I fully expected Sessegnon to come in at left back or left wing back and it'd be this, you know, same 10 plus him coming in for Towler. So, no surprises at all.
No, and Lansbury coming in on the bench. I mean, was it a case of who's fit, who gets on the bench, would you say?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think Alex Scott came in because there weren't the numbers there at the weekend. And with Lansbury fit to come on the bench, and he rightly dropped out. So, yeah, no surprises on the bench either.
Nothing. So, start of the game, I said to you just before we started recording, I felt that it was... very reminiscent of the game at the Liberty at the weekend, where the possession that former Premier League Bournemouth had, they certainly bossed us to begin with, didn't they? And forced a couple of unforced errors by City. That was a feature of the early parts of the game. But first blood went to them when Lloyd Kelly, he saw his shot fingertip saved by Benz. It was a good save by Benz early on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I did wonder whether Stanislas, I think it was at the far post, might have perhaps gambled and slid in, but no, it was a good save. I think if you saw it from the kind of behind goal angle, it was a better save than the commentators gave it credit for at the start. So, I thought started off, Bournemouth pressed us really heavily, and I think teams know that they can't let us get into our stride. Not that we've necessarily found our stride.
Yeah,
no, you don't want to give us any confidence. They certainly didn't do that for the opening quarter of an hour. And then I thought we settled, and we settled pretty well, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Bentz had to be on his mettle again, didn't he? On 11 minutes, I've got here that Lerma put in a shot that was parried. I mean, he sprung well to his left to save that one, really, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good save. I think Solanke was offside in the rebound, but it was a good save. I think it must have wobbled a fair bit because Bentley looked like he was going to his right and ended up almost having to save it with his left hand in the end. So yeah, no, good save.
Yeah, and we were playing with a flat back four with Viner in the middle. I say no surprises the starting lineup, but that was working quite well, and it started to work very well, didn't it? Because we got right back into the game and forced a couple of quick corners. Yeah, so things were starting to look good.
Yeah, definitely. I think the shape probably suits us. I imagine Pearson's still finding out an awful lot about the team, but I think that ability to be able to almost like get in with our bank of four and our bank of five and then say, you know, break us down, I think it's going to be something that we're going to see whilst he kind of learns a bit more about us. I think what it does allow us to do is we're nice and compact, but if there is a poor pass into the midfield or a sloppy touch by one of centre-backs, and I think people like Naj Backinson are quite, they're kind of on their toes to press really quickly. And I think there was a couple of occasions in that opening 20 minutes where we forced them to turn over possession quite quickly as soon as they played a bad pass. So that was kind of quite encouraging to see as well.
Yeah, I mean, as we say, we started to get back into the game, and 22nd minute, Backinson had a shot saved by Bekovic, and then the follow-up, seconds after that, Dijou was there. That was a first sign of things to come, and Backinson, he's really coming into his own as a box-to-box player. Would you describe him as that?
Yeah, I think, over the past couple of weeks, a few of us have been debating on OTIB. If you, this is kind of before Viner, you know, looks like he might be more regular in that kind of holding midfield role. Who would play as the holding midfield role out of Nagy and Backinson? And I think Backinson early on the season when we were playing the back three was playing the deeper role. But I think a few of us think that he's kind of got that rangy leg movement that can get him up and down the pitch quickly. I don't think he's the sharpest.
Yeah, big strides. He's not a sprinter. It's just the way he moves.
So I'm not surprised to see that happen. I think, you know, Nagy gives you plenty of energy in there as well. Yeah. So structurally, we look pretty good and we look like we know what we're trying to do as a team, which is good.
Yeah, well, that's an improvement on certainly where we were. On the half hour, as I say, with City in the ascendancy, Casey Palmer was narrowly wide after good approach play. He seems to be another player who's playing with a smile on his face, something that we've not seen him do since those early games of last season when he seemed to team up well with a Phoebe.
Yeah, I think he looks like he's got a good level of fitness as well now. I think he understands what the role is. And I think it's suiting him. He drifted around a bit today as well, which was good. So we, you know, wasn't static, you know, sat on one side or the other. He was moving infield or, you know, coming in off the lines. And I think that gave us something different as well. Probably a little bit, apart from his set pieces, just probably a little bit disappointing with his final ball today. Never quite got enough pace on it to kind of get it past the centre-back. There were a few opportunities throughout the game where it looked like he could slide someone in. It just didn't quite come off for him tonight. But no, he's been an improved player. I don't think we're seeing him at full tilt yet, but he's been key. And, it, you know, since Christmas, actually, since he's come back in, he's featured quite a lot in our games that we've won. So I think he's, you know, he's someone to persevere with, you know, not just from a financial reason, but... You know, he's young. He's only 24. Perhaps with a, you know, second child on the way. And I think it was due actually Monday. So I don't know.
That's right. Yeah.
If his girlfriend's, you know, could probably have it any minute now. But maybe it's time, you know, to put the kind of any excuses that might have been in his head and think, right, I need to settle down now. And you know, hopefully it's here, and hopefully we'll see some of that.
Well, he's got a good 2 years.
Yeah,
he's got 2 years left on his contract after the completion of this season. A momentary respite for Bournemouth, because just before we got the goal, which we come on to a second, Lerma again a competent save by Bent. So that's three good saves, Dan Bentley made, and maybe I'm making a point of those saves that he made to cover up for what came along not long after. But let's look at the goal. It was again good approach play by Casey Palmer. Drove the ball across the box. It wasn't hit hard, but nobody on the end of it, but it did find its way to Hunt, and he put another dinked ball in, a bit like Nagy's for the opening goal at Borough last week. And it was a goal of quality, wasn't it?
It was a great header. What do they say? Head it back from where it came from. And that was a typical header of that sort. And, you know, and obviously Begovic thinking he might go back across him the other way, you know, is left, you know, rooted to his spot really as it falls in the corner. And I wouldn't say we were, you know, deserved half-time leaders, because we weren't in the end. But I thought on, you know, the 20 minutes that had happened up until that point, I thought we were worthy of the goal. And I think we were pretty strong at that point. It's a real shame, you know, what happened, you know, in injury time.
Yeah. Well, as you might expect, Bournemouth came back into it. And you talked about the shape of the side. And there were a couple of times with that good camera angle that we have up in the Lansdowne, you could see it was a 4-5-1 formation, very much so, wasn't it? Yeah. And they were there in lines. And I guess the objective was to hold out until half time. But again, Bentley had to save from Dan Juma, and that ball went for a corner. That was only half cleared. I mean, you know, we're giving Bent's credit for keeping us in, but he seemed to be more concerned about the fact that Jack Hunt was down on the ground, wasn't it? And then he literally fumbled the ball into his own net. It has been credited as an own goal, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a shocker, isn't it? You know, and I think he's more than enough in credit, you know, for that, for us, you know, people not to make him a scapegoat. But, you know, in the context of today's game, you know, it's probably cost us something. You know, it might have even cost us all 3 points. I think, you know, would have been pretty keen to get in at half time 1-0 up. And I think, you know, we'd perhaps seen a different second half, but I think it buoyed Bournemouth and knocked us back a bit. It was a real shame. I think just in the build-up to that goal, before the corner, I thought we closed the space really well, but then, you know, the quality of Lerma, he got the ball under real pressure. He knocked a first-time pass into space to Dan Juma, who then cut inside and got the shot that was saved by Bentley. Yep. It went off for the corner, but there were a couple of occasions there where I thought we've done really well to close. I think it was probably Lerma on both occasions, and he's just flicked a first-time pass and he's taken like two or three out of the game, and that's the kind of slight difference in quality. £30 million player, I think they said on the commentary. That's the difference between their top quality players and ours. And, you know, ultimately, although the goal didn't come from that move, it was the little bit of pressure around that corner, and that was what probably allowed them to get into that position in injury time.
Yeah, what did you think of Pham's contribution in the first half? I mean, later on in the game, I heard the commentator. I mean, I did first half on Robin's TV and then second half on Sky Red Button, and the latter was a good minute ahead of Robin's TV. But the commentator on Sky, he sort of said, well, Pham hasn't done much. And at least they pronounce his name right now. Pham hasn't done much because he wasn't getting much support. But again, I saw somebody put on OTIB that Pham was running around like he was in porridge.
I think if you break the game down into quarters, I thought he had a slow first quarter. I thought he was, you know, more than decent in that quarter up to half time. I thought started the second half with limited service, he was decent, and last 20 minutes didn't really offer us much. But as a team, I thought we were too quick to try and launch an attack and try and play that killer pass. And I think sometimes you've got to wear the other team down a bit. And what we did, we might spend 2 or 3 minutes chasing the ball around. We get it for 10 seconds and then we give it straight back. And it might look like we're almost going to get through. But sometimes I think we just need to not take the sting out of them, but make them chase us around for 2 or 3 minutes. And when we did that tonight, certainly in the first half,
Yeah, thanks, Ian. don't worry that we're live on air at the moment.
Yeah, I think when we did that, we just turned the ball over too quickly, and I think that's why quite a lot of our players look tired come the end, because they've probably done 70% chasing and 30% when we've got the ball, and you know, that's not necessarily a reflection of possession. I think it's just we're having to spend too much energy chasing the ball rather than using our energy for the right purposes when we've got it, if that makes sense.
We didn't hold possession enough. Ian, you've joined us now. Don't want to go through. Ian, are you there? Can you hear us, Ian? All right, Dave and I have sort of pretty much done the first half, but let me just have your comment on 3 points. Just going to ask you this question. I mean, early doors, they dominated us. We had Bence to thank for keeping us in the game. Then we got right back into it with a good shot from Backinson, Palmer just wide, a good goal, and then their goal. I mean, Bence is in some credit. But just talk about, Ian, the goal that we scored as you saw it, and, you know, has Bence got enough credit that we won't hold that one against him?
Well, to do it in reverse order, Bentley... yes, he has got enough credit. I mean, the number of points he's gained us this season, I'll let him lose us one, because that's all we were ever going to get out of the game tonight. I thought we were okay for 15 minutes. Hang on a second, I'll just switch Mr. Tubby off on Radio Bristol. I think... The more I look at it, I thought we had a good 15 minutes, but we can't go on playing like we're playing. And that was every bit, I think, it was a Dean Holden team performance. We were perhaps a bit better organised. We dropped into this 4-5-1.
Yep.
But we just can't go on playing games in our half and looking for the wonder pass to put somebody through. We just can't do it. No. And I just we haven't got the energy to do it, because obviously when you've only got 30% of the possession, the problem that you've got is that you get worn out. And I thought tonight Pham looked really bushed at the end and not sharp. Tyreek Backinson was gone at about 75 minutes. He was gone by then. And we should have replaced him. Okay, we got two more injuries, possibly a concussion injury to Jack Hunt, and I don't know if that had some bearing in the goal coming in, the one Bentley threw in the net. I thought our goal was good. It was a good header by Backinson, who I've criticised for not being that great in the air for a bloke of 6'3". But I thought, and whilst he was in the game, I thought we had half a chance. But particularly when Viner had to go to right back and then Lansbury came on in midfield, I thought we lost.
Well, he added nothing. I mean, Dave, let's look at
whatever grip of the game we had, we lost gone. And lost it, it badly.
Gone. It had gone. Dave, I thought the second half, empty stadium, it had all the atmosphere of a football combination game, for those that can remember that far back. It really was a bit of a damp squib, and I don't recall anything worthy of note from us. And the first thing I put for them was Lloyd Kelly, who showed that he's good going forward, but he's got a rick in him sometimes. He put in a good cross and cleared by Callas. But, you know, we were really flat in the second half, Dave, weren't we? Yeah, it was just nothing there.
Yeah, and I think some of that's, because Bournemouth tired us out by, keeping the ball and moving us around. And I don't think we did that enough in reverse. And therefore, when you're scrapping for, 5 and 10 seconds spells to produce a magical pass, invariably it doesn't happen. And then you're back to chasing the ball around again. And I think that's something that I'm expecting us to see better of, and us to control more of the game. I don't expect us to dominate the game, but I do expects us to pass it around like we did for spells in the first half, albeit we also, had to take our fair share of chasing them around as well. But I don't think they like chasing us tonight, and I thought we just needed to be a bit more patient. And I think that's a general thing across the season, is I don't think we're patient enough.
So we rush. We try and rush everything, basically.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the goal, Ian, when it came, I mean, we were, as I say, we huffed and puffed, and that was a problem. We were doing too much huffing and puffing, but it was a goal that was I likened it to that goal that Wolves scored against us 3 years ago, where the cross came in, and it was just bundled in at the far post. So that's two goals, effectively, from dead ball situations. Was Bentz at fault for that one as well? How did you see what proved to be the winning goal, Ian?
It went in off somebody's back. Guy at the far post, Billings, hit somebody else in the back and went over the line. But I don't understand modern football, because if you have a fullback on each post, you don't let that goal in. But these days in football, it's unfashionable, so managers don't do it. But I would have done it, particularly how we were late in the game, where we looked beaten. I wouldn't have been. There was only one side going to win that in the second half, and it was Bournemouth. And if you just said to me 3 games ago, you can have 6 points, so you can play the 3 games, I'd have said, well, okay, we'll have the 6 points.
How did you? Mark's just joined as well, Mark. I mean, we don't want to go over the game. You've come in just as we've been describing what proved to be the winning goal. Bournemouth, they were always going to win it based on that second half performance. Not that they were outstanding, but just that we looked a spent force, didn't we? And we had those injuries. We had to put Viner at right back, and that lost us that bit in midfield, because Lansbury showing what a waste of money as a wage he's being. But your thoughts on the second half, Mark, and that goal?
I think we competed. We made Bournemouth go side to side, but it really stretched us physically and mentally. Like you said, we looked tired. We just couldn't hold on to the ball. We were winning the ball on the edge of the area, but we just weren't really able to mount any attacks. And I think we had one shot on the whole of the second half.
Yeah,
I can't even remember what it was. But my McGlass half full person. Yeah, the second half wasn't good, but the organisation tonight was great. And we'd gone in 2 weeks from a side who couldn't pass to one another, couldn't create any chances, to an organised, hard-working team that gives promotion hopefuls a run for their money. We didn't have enough in the end, and we looked a spent force, but that is progress. I'm not expecting us to make a challenge for the playoffs because I'm a realist. But we will win a few games.
We will now and the end of the season. That was always going to be a difficult one today.
We haven't got the depth. You lose Hunt. You've got to play when a bloke who's played great in midfield on Saturday set up the first goal, and it's a real struggle. Lansbury, he should be better than that. His passing was poor.
Yeah,
one pass went into
touch. Dave, Mark Carter's texted us on the message board here, and he said 66% pass completion rate. We're never going to get promotion with that. And that was a feature of the game today, wasn't it? We were giving the ball away, and it wasn't necessarily a Holden-like performance. Somebody else has put on the text feed that under Holden we'd have lost that 4-1. But, there's I think Pearson's getting an idea of the task that is ahead of him now, wouldn't you think? But that pass completion rate is rubbish.
Yeah, it is. And I think some of that's borne out of the fact that we try and play a killer pass too early. So, we ought to be able to, and maybe we should do. Actually, if we just kind of think about the stats, we could make that better by just knocking side-to-side passes around the back, although I'm not sure that we've got the patience to do that either. But, I think it's a bit of a, legacy of us trying to play too attacking too quick. And I thought, at times I thought there were some great balls that we played between the lines to, get people going. I think when we were having our best spells, Palmer was picking the ball up in little spaces, getting that half a yard and driving forward on the angle. And we looked like we caused them some problems, but we gave up the ball too easy. And yeah, 66% is nowhere near good enough. But I think some of that will come from the way we tried to play, but also got to give Bournemouth some credit for not letting us just passing it around for passing it around's sake as well. I think I always get a little bit, I think people forget there's two teams out there, that other team's trying to stop you doing anything. And, they've got Ben Pearson in there who's now in a better side than he was at Preston. And he was
absolutely
thorn in our side for Preston for breaking up and pinching balls away or giving fouls or whatever. And he did that today, but he's doing it in a better side as well. So I think we have to give them a bit of credit as well. It's not good enough, it's also there's some mitigating factors as well, I think.
Yeah. Ian, Albuquerque is put on here. I don't believe we're going far up the table until we get our best players back. Now, yes, we have got a lot of players, but it's not like we bought kids on, because when the injuries did take place, we were able to put Zach Viner at right back, which is a position he's familiar with. We brought on Henry Lansbury. We've also got Masengo as well. I mean, are we trying to make excuses for, trying to make excuses for a disappointing performance on the night, would you say?
Well, I go back to what I used to say when Holden was there. Yeah, we've got players missing, but we should have done better with what we had. I think the biggest mistake tonight, there were two other options. You could have brought on Taylor Moore, who can play right back, or you could have left Viner in midfield, or you could have brought on Riley Towler and moved Steven Sessegnon over. So I would have preferred to see us do that as a more positive as a more positive statement. But no, and when these players coming back, I think from everything I'm seeing and feeling and hearing, forget it until the start of April, end of March. There's another four games in March. Then we've got a 2-week break. I think you might see them back after that, but I'm getting...
Which is Easter weekend, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm getting more and more and more worried about the situation down there, the medical situation, the injuries and all the rest of it. I'm just bothered that we just don't seem to be able to either keep players fit or get them fit.
What's the latest with Liam Walsh? I mean, what was the under-23s are playing today? And you think, well, is Walsh out of it because he's with the first team squad, or has he suffered another relapse? Has anything been said in that respect?
No, we don't know. And this is the point. You've got all these statements about if I see he's out on the grass again, I'm going to throw the computer out through the window because I'm just sick of hearing it. Yeah. You know, he's out on the grass. But he's not joining in. Okay. So what does that mean then? When's he going to be available? Well, I want to know is when are these players going to be fit and available for first team selection? That's all I want to know. I don't want to know what's wrong with them. I don't want a blood test. No. I don't want to know, you know, their crown jewels or their family crest. I just want to know when will they be fit and available.
Need to show some patience, Ian, because I think from Nigel Pearson's press conference, he's predominantly interested in talking about the players that are ready for selection. And he's, you know, I think he, you know, I wouldn't say tore Gregor off one yesterday's press conference.
He was quite direct with it.
But he was pretty sure, like, you know, you've already kind of asked me that, you know, and I think, you know, we kind of get Pearson's star now. I think the journos are going to have to up their game a little bit in terms of the questions they ask, because I don't think he's just going to accept the same question each week.
He won't accept inane questions, will he? He won't accept inane stuff.
And it's quite refreshing. It might get a bit tedious after a while, but I think you'll know about players being fit when they're very close to being up for selection.
Yeah. He needs to have a word with the media department then, doesn't he? Because all we've had this week is a film of, look, here's Andy Vyman. And then Pearson's got to come out and say, he ain't going to play. You're not going to see Joe Williams either. Oh, right. Okay. Well, we know where we are now then, don't we?
That's what he has said, in fairness, though, hasn't he? He said that last year.
Even when we've not heard about Walsh, didn't he?
We've not heard about Walsh, thing. You know. We could all speculate.
Or De Silva.
Or Baker, who we've seen running round on the pitch in the training videos. I mean, look, the thing is, we just want a bit of honesty. City and injuries is like when you used to order a bit of furniture from MFI. They'd say it'd be ready in 10 weeks, right? It'd be ready in 10 weeks, and you bloody know it's not going to be ready in 10 weeks, and then it turns up in 12. What you want them to do with the injuries and say, Baker is out for 6 months, and then after 18 weeks, he's making a good recovery. He's going to be back in contention. We're going to play him in the under-23s in a couple of weeks' time. Let's not have this saying nothing and confusion. And Gore Blige, we got Nye, just as a new contributor on here, he said Andy Rowles is a fraud. And I mean, wherever Andy Rowles goes, the injury record does appear to be shit, because we're talking about Arsenal and West Ham. And surely Nigel Pearson's experienced enough that he's going to expose that, Dave, isn't he? He's bound to be looking at it in detail. I mean, he's not been here a week hardly yet, but he must be looking long and hard at that, mustn't he?
I'm sure looks like he's a meticulous kind of manager, doesn't it? I'm sure it'll be one of the things to understand why he's only got, let's say, 12, 13, 14 senior players available to him each week. And, you know, he's making it at the bench with some kids. You know, I'd expect he's too chuffed about that, but he'll live with it. And I guess he'll root out, you know, if there's any blame surrounding that. So,
Mendip City's put on here, Walsh is gone, surely. What with his contract running out, and it doesn't look like he's going to get any games. You think that's a bit harsh, a bit premature with that sort of comment, Dave? Or
I don't know. You know, I honestly don't know.
But, all right, Mark, let me ask you a quick. Mark, this was game 21 without a draw. So now our last 21 games in the league, win, read, 1-8, drawn none, lost 13. That's 24 points out of a possible 63. I mean, this season, appointing a rookie, never should have been appointed in the first place, manager in the summer, and then this sort of form, you know, it's just as well we're not in the ground, really, because it's been rubbish. And that was, what, our fourth home defeat in a row tonight. Yeah, I mean, something's got to change, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I suppose, in a way, the way I see it, we sort of started with a clean slate again, in a way, because, you know, we were things have conspired to help, you know, to help us get Nigel Pearson, you know, which is a fantastic appointment. It's not been great the way we've gone about it. And, yeah, losing four home games in a row is not great. But the side is looking better.
Yes.
Albeit with very small pool of players to choose from. The way I see it, Nigel Pearson, he's not going to let the players, obviously, he's not going to let the players who aren't available affect him. He's professional and calm enough to go about. He'll lift the kids who come in. You know, what great what he said about Riley Taylor, his post-match comments on Saturday. You know, I took him off, but I told him he's been a part of two wins. He'll lift those players, and if they have to go out on the pitch, they'll do their best for the club, no doubt. But I think he knows he's got enough to build, get a few wins between now and the end of the season. He can see our limitations, but we've got a chance to build slowly. We just got to find two halves of football because we only seem to be playing for one half, even in the last three games. But I'm happy, even if it's slow progress. And I just love listening to Nigel Pearson. Even if he was laying into, he'd do it so slowly and carefully. Like,
deliberately,
You could imagine him pulling the wings of a fly, couldn't you?
Yeah. Ian, we got 12 games to go now. And as I say, the playoff chance is well and truly extinguished now, because looking at the league table, we're 10 points behind Bournemouth, and we're 12 points behind Reading, so we were only ever chasing sixth, but I think that chance has gone. And we look over our shoulders with those 6 points that we got in those two away wins, just as well we did, because Rotherham have got two games in hand over us, and they're hot on the heels now of Birmingham and Coventry. But you're Nigel Pearson now. What do you do in the remaining 12 games of the season? Do you experiment? Do you play more of the youngsters? You give them halves of games? You want to win as many games as you can, but you want to... We've never been in this luxurious position before where we're not fighting relegation and we've playoff chance has gone. What should he do? What would you do? What would you do now with 12 games to go?
I can't see us picking up any more than a point a game.
Yeah.
And that would take us up to about, 57?
Yeah.
Which is scandalously poor, let's be honest. But we are where we are. No, I wouldn't just throw the kids in willy-nilly, because I think that could destroy their confidence. So what I'd be looking to do, I think we need another 5 points to make sure that we stay up. And that would mean that Rotherham would need to get 13 points more than we do to catch us. And that I really can't see that happening. In fact, I think if you went down the bookies, you'd get really, really good odds on that not happening. And I think he needs to win as many games and get as many points as possible. He needs to use the next 9 weeks, because that's all that's left of the season, to look at who's out of contract, who he wants to keep, and who he can keep, because that might be two different things. And then I'd let, apart from, I think, Walsh and Zizou, I'd probably let the rest go and build a stronger squad for next season. And like I said before, I'd have a complete clear out top to bottom, Mark Ashton downwards, including the medical and the recruiting team. That's the other thing I do, because I don't think you never solve a problem with the thinking that created it and all that. And I think there's a lot of thinking down there there's some good stuff down there, like the academy and some of the lads that are coming through. But there's some rot down there as well, and I think that just needs to be cut out. I might be completely wrong. It might be brilliant, but that's what I do.
Yeah. Dave, before I come to you, Tony the Greek on here said secure safety, which pretty much agrees with what Ian has just said. Allow the out-of-contract players to decide whether they are in or out. Then give Nige the time to bring in who he wants ready for next season. I mean, secure safety, obviously that's paramount. Allow the out-of-contract players to decide whether they are in or out. It's not really in their gift to decide whether they're in or out, is it? Because we haven't offered them anything. We haven't had any negotiations yet. And how many of them does Pearson want to keep? Ian's given his recommendation. But how would you tackle the 12 games? Or how would you use the 12 games that are left, which is a quarter of a season, basically? But, we're nestling in mid-table now.
Yeah, we are. I think, playoffs is over. I think relegation's over as well. We're not going to get less than 5 points from our last 12 games, I don't think. And I know Ian was talking about Rotherham. I think Coventry and Birmingham are are in deep crap as well, really. You know, Rotherham got two games in hand, or two losers in hand, as I always call them, but they're only 3 points behind those. Huddersfield are on a struggling run as well. And I think we just need to just reflect on the last three games. We've played Borough, Swansea and Bournemouth. So we've played three teams in the top nine, and we've got 6 points. Whether we deserve 6 points, I don't really care. But we've got the job done to some extent.
And yeah, we've got 2 points a game over the last three games, haven't we?
So I think we'll pick up enough points to, you know, then not even be a worry about relegation, you know, let alone think, oh my God, you know, we still needed a couple more points. I think we'll get those at some point, you know, in the next five or six games, and it'll be, you know, a coast into the end of the season. I think regarding players, I think, you know, we don't know of the out-of-contract players how many of them are saying, come on, I want to sign, I'll take a pay cut. You know, we don't know the situations on it. It's completely unknown what's going on, you know, and therefore it's really difficult to say, you know, don't play the out-of-contract players. I don't think we've got enough players to do that first place. But actually, some of those actually might want to play because they're trying to justify getting a new contract. So I think...
Well, would you put Patterson in that bracket?
He might well be. I bet he's a bit cheesed off that he's got injured, played through a bit of injury as well by the seams of it, and now he's injured again at a time when he's, you know, what's he, 29, 30, isn't he, Pato? He's probably last couple of years of a decent contract and I'm injured. So I think it's too easy to say, oh, you know, throw in the kids and play the out, you know, not play the out of contract players, because some of them will be here next season. I don't know how many. It probably won't be many more than three or four, and it might be, as Ian said, it might be one or two, and it might be not necessarily the one or two or three or four that we expect it to be. I honestly don't know, but I think Pearson will be wanting to finish the season strongly because he'll want to go in to next season in a good position, because he'll also use that as leverage to players, say, you know, players he
his
wants
own,
to sign.
Say,
look at what I've done with this club in a short space of time. We're a really attractive proposition. I think you should come and play for me next season. So I think there's lots still to play for. Multiple dynamics going on here, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think success would be beating last season's points total, which might not necessarily mean finishing higher than last season. And, you know, if Pearson can beat last season's points total, which, what was that? Somebody tell me last season's points
63.
Total? 63. That's going to be a bit of a big ask, but not unachievable. But you could go for that. Or Pearson might come in and say, look at my points per game record. If he failed that, you know, if he's got, what's he had in charge? 14 games in charge, you know, his points per game record. He can say, before I came, it was this. And after I've been here, it's gone up to 1.75 points a game or something like that. That would look good on paper from his tenure. I mean, Mark, what do you think? I mean, Ian and Dave have sort of said pretty much what text comments are coming in on here. People are saying, you know, get safety and then, you know, aim to win as many games as possible. How would you be approaching the 12 games if you're pitch? I mean, would you clear out the coaches now and say, thanks, I'm going to bring my own blokes to give them a feel? Do we think that coaching setup will be here next season?
I mean, who knows? I don't think any contracts will be addressed until the end of the season, and he wants to squeeze every last bit out of the very few players he's got available until the end of the season, backed up by a few kids. I mean, there's a lot of players that we can, you know, we can write off, you know, the Williams, maybe Pato, Jada Silva, Pring, Lyman, all of those players. And he can only concentrate on the ones that he's got. Now I wouldn't throw kids in. He's got to play the best players he's got available. He'll only play the kids if there's a meaningless game at the end of the season. That's when we usually see some kids on the bench and they get a run out. But now I don't expect there to be many changes, but I would like to see us get six or seven wins from the last 12. That'll be really finishing on a high. But I expect Nigel Pearson to sign a contract, and unless something dramatic changes, that we have a big collapse between now and the end of the season. I can't see that happening. Well, somebody comes in and poaches him. I think Nigel Pearson will be Bristol City manager next season, and hope that the guy of his stature. If we got a director of football, I mean, Mark Mark Ashton's got, somebody's got to take responsibility.
Well, let's come on to that.
Not just appointing Holden, but appointing roles, and you know all the injuries. It's just a joke. You know, you don't want your club becoming a joke, do you?
No, this business about winning as many games as we possibly can, as Lad Lees has pointed out on here, apart from Brentford, we don't have anybody in the top six to play. And the next two are against QPR, who lost at home to ever-improving Barnsley, who were in the top six for a period, and then away at Birmingham City. So you look at both of those games and say, you know, you want to win one and draw one as a minimum. From that perspective. But Dave's just commented on text while we've been talking. Pearson doesn't know if he's going to be here yet. At what point do they make a decision on Pearson? Is it when that 52-point safety net is passed? Ian, what do you say to that?
He's gone, I think.
He's disappeared. Yeah, he's gone down. I'll ask you then, Dave. You said Pearson doesn't know if he's going to be here. I don't know
what have you said to Ian, you two?
I don't know. Yeah, but when are they going to press? When are they going to press the button on Pearson's contract? When 52 points are achieved, or what?
I think he's both parties are sussing each other out at the moment, aren't they? If Pearson goes and headbutts a few players tomorrow off the back of losing tonight, then he's going to be here very long, is he? All joking aside, he's looking at whether he can work with the club, and Lansdowne will be thinking, were we right to, you know, make an appointment as quickly as this? I think all paths are leading towards it won't be that long before he gets confirmed as a manager, and I think some of that will be a feature around when do we look like we're safe. And has he been here long enough? You know, if we win the next two, you know, you might say, well, we're safe, in which case, trigger. But you might say, hang on a minute, I still don't know enough about the club yet to commit myself. Everything leads to him, you know, he's really positive about it. So I think he wants to, but he probably wants to make sure as well. So I think it'll happen, but it'll probably be a few weeks down the line, yeah, I would think.
Yeah, might be by the international break because how many matches we got between now and the international break? Is it four? I think it
something
is,
like
isn't
that,
it?
Then,
four,
yeah.
Like that. So if they got, I don't know, 12 points up for grabs, if they got eight, I would think it would be pretty much cast iron. I mean, Tomo's put a long comment on here. He was at the game reporting for one of the media outlets. The cameras may not have picked up Nigel and the touchline at certain times. Simpson is very vocal and heavily involved giving instructions. And Tomo says he also taught two good sides of Nigel. When Casey was substituted, he gave a massive man hug round the neck to say a big well done. However, he got a little frustrated with Masengo's casual attitude in getting ready to come on. As he strolled down the steps, Nigel had his hands in the air and had a few words. I mean, Mark, he's not a guy who's going to... It looks like Mark has disappeared as well. It's only you and me.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're still there. I mean, he's not a guy to mince his words, Pearson, is he? And that gesture towards Masengo, you know, probably thought, oh, I've got 3 minutes, oh well, just casual. He's not the sort of guy who's going to tolerate this sort of stuff, is he?
No, and you know, you could see, you know, when we lost our concentration tonight, I mean, you've got to concentrate for 90 minutes in this game because one little mistake and you're done, and we've been done at the back post tonight. So no, he's not. He wants his players to be right on the money, and I think that's the difference with Bristol City now than when we played Barnsley. We look like a completely different team, with midfielders that can get in front of the ball when the defences are set, that can pass and move. Did that in very good spells in the first half. It was just a tiredness at the end. I think Fiji must have been spent as well because he was... You know, he wasn't chasing after players. He was whether he was told to just stay around the halfway line and over some loose balls. He wasn't exactly chasing back near the end of the game. I don't know what you think about that, Dave, but I just saw him drifting. He seemed to drift along at the end.
Who was that? Sorry, I was
Diju. No, we said Diju. That before you came on, Mark. Actually, that Diju was a little bit frustratingly, and as a commentator said, he wasn't getting the service. You know, so it's a catch 22, isn't it, really, from that perspective?
Yeah, no, I was just thinking he was sort of stationed around the halfway line, but I thought it might have been better to close down, you know, the mat, you know, when they were the defense, they were bringing it at defense and we were holding our line. Maybe he should have tracked back a little bit more, whether he was told to just stay there and wait for any loose balls, I don't know. They all look very tired. I'm the shift and play that sort of. It was like a rugby league drift defence at times, and it worked very well. But we just got stretched one too many times. But I'm pretty positive. I thought there were some really good moments tonight, and you know Tyreek Backinson looked like the player in the first half that he did at the start of the season because.
Before
he got COVID, he's looked so effective. A guy, he's got a very good shot on him right when he backlifts, and that header was terrific. And Casey Palmer looks a completely different player. Just shows you.
He looks interested now, Dave. one man whose silence is baffling, Mark Ashton, the Ipswich.
I thought you were going to say Ian.
Yeah,
you never see silence from him before. Here, silence. From
no, just yeah. I thought he meant
that. Dave, Mark Ashton.
Maybe he is Mark Ashton. There we go. No,
he could.
We never seen him in the same room together. Actually,
Mark Ashton's been very quiet. I mean, the Ipswich Town rumor seems to have died a death. From many respects, Ian's trying to get through, so he's got a problem there. But he'll have to text me. Can't take that. I could tell it was Ian. That was his number. Mark Ashton. Right. When are we going to hear from Mark Ashton? Because there was a comment. Pearson commented about how he likes to work with the director of football so he can focus on the training. I mean, why haven't we heard?
He's not, is he?
Yeah,
I suppose it's the equivalent. But
yeah. Dave, why haven't we heard anything from Ashton? He's so quiet.
I would imagine one, Steve Lansdowne has taken a bit of control back. Two, the focus is on football at the moment and not on anything non-football. And I think Ian said this on Saturday, and I agree with him as well. You know, we all quite like having a go at Mark Ashton, you know, me in particular. But I think in fairness, he doesn't always come out just when we're winning. He's been quite quiet for quite a while, to be honest. And I think, you know, he normally comes out in the windows. Obviously, we didn't do a lot of business this year, so there wasn't a lot to talk about then. And I think he has perhaps been just pushed into the background a little bit. Well, you know, what is there for him to come out and say at this moment, unless we're suddenly going to see a plethora of new contracts signed? So I think he's just, you know, in the background and meandering away. But I think this thing with Ipswich Town is quite interesting how it's come about, you know, and it sounds a fairly far-fetched rumour, you know, links with America, and then, you know, City were out there last year. And you think, oh yeah, that's just people, you know, putting two and two together. And then you hear that the US consortiums, they're looking to appoint a guy called Michael O'Leary.
Mike O'Leary, who is he not connected with one of...
And you know, you don't need to be a conspiracist theory, although it helps, to look back and see names like Michael O'Leary, Darrell Eales, a company called Old Sidon, and all paths have got the same juncture with Mark Ashton. So, you know, whether that was someone else putting two and two together and the fact that they heard O'Leary's name was mentioned and thought, oh, I bet Mark Ashton would be up for that job. That might be where the two and two. But, it's certainly not a completely ridiculous notion that there could be some involvement there, or they might go for him in the summer or something like that. Once again, we're all massively speculating here. But, you know, it's not quite, you know, Roy the Alien's usual thing on Twitter about, you know, we're signing Lionel Messi and, you know, Louis van Gaal's coming in as sporting director. You know, it's not that realms, is it? But, you know, I don't think anything's going to happen in the short term. But I know absolutely nothing. I'm just guessing. So
I remember when Mark Ashton did last speak on Radio Bristol during a transfer window, like Dave said. He said one thing which is quite prescient, that is, you rush Mother Nature at your peril. Well, we did, didn't we, subsequently? And look where we are. You know, with the likes of Joe Williams and Patterson. Yeah. But, I mean,
the sort of company that, that Ashton's mixing in, and of course the fact that they just Ipswich have just they've just sacked part of company with Paul Lambert as well. You know,
well, they got Paul Cook in.
You know, I didn't notice that. Well, somebody was going to get him, weren't they?
That's been confirmed, Dave, hasn't it? Yeah, Paul Cook to Ipswich.
Yeah, so I mean, he's going to mix with some powerful people, and you know, and the fact that that Steve Lansdowne said, "Oh, we like him, position himself and on the EFL," but who knows? I mean, administrators, chief executives come and go. Who knows what might happen in the pre-season? Somebody else might move in, like, you know, maybe Richard Scudamore, like you said, David. You just don't know.
I think that was a fanciful idea, even though it made some sense.
I'm looking forward to. I'm just genuinely pleased about the improvement we made in the last 2 weeks, because let's face it, we were hopeless and desperate 2 weeks ago after that Reading game. Never mind the Barnsley game.
And the
Barnsley game. We were just going down. So we've appointed a great manager in Nigel Pearson. It's gonna the side's got its limitations, but it's come on tremendously, and I think we can. If we can work up to 60 points, I think that'd be a good finish. But as soon as we get those 5 or 6 points, I think that you'll see Steve Lansdowne appointing Nigel Pearson full time. And they probably, I would say, if we're being smart here, they probably have already agreed some figures. Should we reach a safety margin? You think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Ian's back in the room now. I think we had a little bit of technical.
Elvis is back in the building.
He's back. Yeah. Ian has entered the building. Ian,
I didn't like some bizarre stuff, but I know what you mean with Elvis.
Yeah, somebody said Ian was too negative on Radio Bristol. We don't want to talk
about that. He's got a suspicious mind, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We can't go on together.
Oh, no. Yeah, all right.
That's caught in a trap. I can't walk back. Yeah. Sorry, you started it.
STF.
Here comes Ian, the great pretender. All right, but Ian, we were talking about Mark Ashton.
Ashton.
What? I mean, he's been quiet. I think the Ipswich things died a death.
I'd love to live in your heads, because these conspiracy theories are unbelievable. Look. Yeah. The only thing I've heard Nigel Pearson say is, "I'm getting on very well with Mark."
That's it. That's what we said.
We're going over the training ground tomorrow to have a look at the training ground, and we'll see how it goes. Now, that's all he said. Now, out of that, there have been about 90 clickbait headlines today from sites like FL72 saying he's going to have a chat to him about his contract. That's not what he said.
No, he's going to look at the training.
I don't think any of us are saying that, are we? I think we're talking about the Ipswich Tang thingy, and aren't we?
If the way I see it, if Mark Ashton wants to go to Ipswich, he goes. Simple as that. And I think the only thing is, if he's under contract, Lansdowne might say to Ipswich, "Well, if you want him that bad, give us £1 million or whatever." You know, if he's got 2 years of a £500,000 a year contract left, give us £1 million and he's yours. And then they offer us 700 and off he goes. I mean, I don't see that it's a big deal and worth worrying about. And I don't think there's any conspiracy theory. The only thing you have to make sure of, and if him and Nigel Pearson are getting on well, you have to make sure that the fact that he left didn't have a detrimental effect on Nigel Pearson wanting to stay. I don't think it would, but none of us know, do we? That's the point.
No, we don't.
And I think what we've got to see is the results from now to the end of the season, and then you'll get a feel for who's going to come and who's going to go. And some of the players we can't hold on to because, you know, we've got two that are definitely going because they're on loan. So Mawson's already gone.
We're going to return him to sender, aren't we?
Well, no, Lansbury was out of contract at Villa, and for some reason we signed him. I've no idea why, but anyway, we did. So he'll be gone. Adrian Mariapa, who I think's been playing decent since he's started actually playing in the position he likes to play. That helps all the time, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So he goes, he'll be gone. And then it's up to Nigel Pearson. I mean, players like, I can't see Baker getting another contract because he's injured all the time. Unless it was some kind of fancy pay when play deal. And then you've got to look at players that, you know, Pham's not going to sign. That's absolutely clear to a blind man. And will Liam Walsh sign? I mean, first of all, we've got to see him back playing football and think, well, do I actually want to keep the kid? Because, I mean, there's a good footballer in there. I rate Walshy when I've seen him play. But there's lots. But I don't see anybody. You mentioned Pato earlier on. Can't see him staying. And he's another one that's injured, you know, who's got better, then had an op, then played, then got injured. And you start thinking to yourself, well, hang on a minute.
It's a mess.
So it is a mess. And I think the vast majority of the 13 that are out of contract with us will be, and that's not including Mawson and Sessegnon, so you can call it 15.
Yeah,
is out of contract. We'll go, and I think we might keep two, we might keep three, but that's it. And then you've got to say, well, who do you want? Who's going to come here, and who are you going to bring in? Because what we got at the moment is nowhere near a promotion team. Nowhere near.
No. I mean, Dave made the point as well that Pearson might not, if he stays, he might not fancy some of the players that are left behind anyway. You know,
I think that's fair comment. I mean, there's some that you'd look at, and I mean, there's some that are obvious ones. You'd want to keep Dan Bentley. You want to keep Thomas Callas. You'd want to keep Zach Viner. Some of the younger lads that have done all right. You know, your Tyreek Backinsons. But then you'd have a look around and say, well, okay, now who else is there? But if the plan is to get promoted, you say, right, wallop. These are the seven or eight blokes I need, senior pros, that are going to come in, and we'll play the kids. We'll dip them in and out, which is what you like to do with
your players. Well, that's the other thing I was thinking with
playing 46 games a season.
And with some of the kids, you could bring one kid in for every one of the next 12 games, a bit like they did with Tauro, although that was necessity. Let's see some of these 17 and 18-year-olds, or give them 20 minutes if we're 2-0 up in a game and we're safe. You know, bringing a kid on with 20 minutes to go, not when the referee said there's 4 minutes to play. Let's see what they're made of. I mean, Dave, do you think he might play when we're safe, play a couple of games with Max O'Leary and give Bence a rest and sort of see what Max is like firsthand? Because the only person we are really going to get any money for is Bentley, isn't he? I don't see anybody else coming in knocking our doors down for any of our players. Do you think he'd try Max just to see what he thinks firsthand? Because that's the experimental part of having 12 games to go, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think might give him a couple of games to see what he's like in the pressure of a league game under, you know, his management. I think, you know, O'Leary's probably had enough experience of league football not to be feel like he's being thrown in. You know, I think he is a solid number two, and I'd like for him and Dan Bentley to be our one and two next year as well. Mm. And I think that gives us a real kind of solid base. I think, you know, Ian's talked about Callas. I think Callas is probably the only one on recent form where we might make some of that money back on what we outlaid for him. I think, you know, a month or so ago, I think, you know, you're thinking, God, Jesus, he's you know, his value's fallen off a cliff, but I think he's picked back up again. I thought he was pretty decent tonight again. And, you know, I think he's earned some of his value back if his value does fluctuate as rapidly as that. But
Do you think there's any chance that he might, because he's worked with him before, just might offer Mariapa a 1-year deal so that if he wants to play three at the back, he can say, well, it's Mariapa and Callas. He's going to let Baker go. Zach is better in midfield than he is at the back. Can you see him possibly getting a contract if he stays? Pearson, that is?
Yeah, he might do. I just texted him back just now to someone about, you know, people saying about like Shakespeare and Walsh coming in the summer. I had a look at I didn't have a massively in-depth look, but I looked at Pearson earlier on, and I've not seen any history of him taking coaches or players with him wherever he's gone. You know, someone happily put me right on that. And I think from his interviews as well, when he was asked about kind of Vyman and Martin and Mariapa, his kind of thing was, I'll chat to them, but I'm quite interested in other people's views and forming my own views. So, which I thought was quite interesting. So I don't think he's one who feels, conscious of not having I'll say yes men without really meaning, you know, yes men around him, people he can trust. I think he'll want to build trust with people, but I don't think that'll necessarily need to come from people who he's had previously. So I think, you know,
what would be for? Yeah.
I think he's a good, he's, you know, a class manager who's more than capable of spotting what he needs and hopefully going out there and getting it, whether it's players or coaching staff or directors of football or whatever.
Well, with all the mess that we've
he's almost saying Pearson, he's learning all of the time as a manager, isn't he? He's not just one saying, I'll do it this way.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, he said that I want to progress. And, you know, it's just not one way of doing things. He did say New Simpson, he sounded him out when he was with OH Leuven, I think, wasn't he, in Belgium for players when Simpson was working for the England setup. So for all we know, he may be happy, depending on results, with Simpson and Downing going forward. We just don't know.
Simpson sounded very chirpy, didn't he, on Saturday, having been,
I thought that image of the players in the huddle and Bentley, Callas, everybody, he captured their intention. You say about Simpson was focused and on it as well. And I mean, look, tonight was a disappointment. And, you know, as we've said, we've lost, but we didn't, you know, we've arrested that decline. I mean, look, just one final point, because we've just gone over the hour here. Season tickets, I guess any news on that is going to be predicated by, is that the right word? That's a big word this time of night.
By very good, Jeff. I'm impressed.
What happens with Pearson? I mean, because by now, you know, early bird deals and everything, they should be out, Ian, shouldn't they? We should know, you know, and financially, they should rough, you know, if we assume that we are going to be back in grounds from the first week of August, they should have, if they see what the season ticket demand is, they can work out what the likely attendances are going to be next season. You know, are more people going to go pay on the day because they've been conditioned to watching matches on Robin's TV? So, Ian, when do you think we'll hear something on season tickets, before or after Pearson's appointment?
I think it would need to be after, because I think what I'm gaining, garnering from social media and people I speak to, and I've got a very, very big circle of all kinds of City fans, and they're all saying this. I mean, before Holden got the sack, they were all saying, no, I'm not going to renew. Now they're saying, well, I'm going to wait and see. If Pearson's appointed, I probably will. So I think they need to get that sorted sooner rather than later, and for the players as well. Because, you know, if I'm – we know certain players. I mean, Pham's probably got something lined up abroad, would be my guess. If that doesn't pan out, he might sign. But if you know, they're going to want to know, well, okay, who's the manager? I mean, Nigel Pearson rates me and I'm doing well, but, you know, if Nigel Pearson goes and somebody else comes in, I don't want to sign a 3-year contract and find myself, playing for the under-23s or not playing at all. So I think it's a very, very important step to say, right, okay, we've got this guy. Things seem to be going very well. He's an experienced manager. He's been there, seen it and done it. He signed a 3-year deal at the end of this year. None of this rolling 1-year contract stuff. He signed a 3-year deal. Right, bang, go for it. And at that point, but what you must do is, it's no good giving him the job and then saying, right, okay, well, 13 players are leaving. We've got obviously COVID, there's no money to spend, because I think that's a bit pointless.
Is there going to be any other than parachute payment clubs, Ian, are there many clubs in the Championship that are going to have money to spend? Because, you know, all these plans must be in place now.
They voted to not have salary capping.
Yeah.
So they're obviously thinking, well, you know, I mean, obviously the ones with parachute payments don't want that, because they're getting a lump more money. I mean, you come down, I think first year down, your parachute payment is over 40 million, isn't it? You can see why they're thinking, well, there's 40 million quid I got more than Bristol City before a balls kick. But I mean, those few clubs can't sign everybody, but they can probably have the best of the out of contract players, and we'll be stuck with I mean, you never know. Nigel Pearson has obviously got some good contacts in the game. He might be able to go and get four or five really good loans from the likes of Everton, where Steve Walsh is, Leicester, where he was manager, although it all ended a little bit acrimoniously, I think. And and with players like that, we might be able to do that. I mean,
wasn't that meant to be the rationale for getting Simpson and Downing on board with their England connection? You know, and Steve Cooper at Swansea seems to have done a pretty good job of creaming up those type of players. But
I think we got another problem as well because of the way COVID's affected society and the fact that we've been away from stadium for so long. I think there's going to be a reluctance in a lot of people to commit to going back to full stadia because we don't know. I mean, the full restriction meant to be lifted by May. There's a lot that can still change between May and August, you know, touch wood. The vaccines, you know, will work and that there won't be any mutations that resist the vaccine, the number of vaccines that are out there. But there's just so many unknowns. And with people being furloughed or have lost jobs, will they commit to season tickets or just return to full stadia? There may be a lot of worry out there. We just don't know, do we?
You're not going to, the unemployment's not going to kick in fully until after furlough ends, and furlough's not going to end until the end of September, by which time people will have to make up their mind whether they're, I mean, I think it's too expensive to go. There's a lot of difference between a tenner for Robbins TV and 30 odd quid to sit in the doorman on for a match day ticket. So I won't be renewing unless Pearson or another really good, you know, if they said, sorry, Nigel Pearson's decided he wants to leave for whatever reason, but we're bringing in Eddie Howe, then I'd buy a season ticket. But it'd be more like City to say, oh, Nigel's decided he's leaving because he's had a really good offer.
And we're getting in a guy from Plymouth or something stupid like that. I mean, it's interesting.
Here comes Mike Appleton.
It's interesting you make the point about furlough because I've been saying that, look, you know, there's going to be a tsunami of unemployment when furlough stops. But other than the hospitality sector, somebody said to me, quite a senior business person, is that those companies that are getting by with people, you know, less than what they had before and getting just as much output, they've already made those redundancies. And what is the unemployment's gone up by about, is it 500,000, 750,000 over the last 12 months?
It's about a million, Dave.
You know, I wonder how many white collar job people are on furlough that people are just, you know, it's a hospitality sector. I mean, couple of people have picked up Fevz Az as well, also Cider Suspect. Steve Walsh is no longer at Everton, hasn't been for a while. I think he's out in the States, Dave. That's correct, isn't it? He's in the States rather than there. But I mean, your final point, Dave. Season tickets before or after Pearson? Do you think they'll announce the plans?
Yeah, I think it'll be after. I don't think there's any real advantage in trying to do it early. I think the marketing team, and I'm no marketing expert, but you would imagine a marketing team would be thinking our best chance of selling as many season tickets is to do it on the back of Nigel Pearson being appointed. I think you know, Ian's point about, you know, people not being able to afford, I think it's a real genuine concern. And I think I might have said it on either last week or the week before. I wonder whether there's, you know, would the club be better off selling, let's say, 18,000 season tickets at a reduced price than 9,000 at today's prices? Because you're going to lose.
That is an excellent point, which is why you get such big crowds in Germany, isn't it? Yeah, because their football is about half the price of it.
Yeah, I remember going to see Hertha Berlin against Stuttgart. It was like €7 for a ticket, you know, in the Olympic Stadium. And you know, albeit it's a few years ago now, but the prices haven't gone up much. And I think, you know, undoubtedly, if we've got 12,000, 13,000, 14,000 season tickets at the moment, you were going to lose some of those. And that's why I kind of said 9,000 versus 18,000. I think you could quite easily lose 3,000 or 4,000 season ticket holders purely because of the state people's
and the uncertainty, because Parrish have thought of a third wave. You know, if you've parked it up with, I mean, people who bought last year have had it back. I've got £500 set on my account, which was for the residue of the last five games of corporate hospitality. And I actually put a question to, sent an email to, Mark, is it Mark Kelly? Yes, it is Mark Kelly. If you're listening, Mark. I said, look, what are you going to do?
Tunes it every week.
Write off week. Are you going to write off year five of my 5-year deal, right? Or totally and say brand new deal from 21-22? Or are you going to make what would have been year six? You're going to roll over my year five deal. Yeah. And if you did that, I said to him, right. And I said, the £500 credit, I'll offset that. And you'll get me for another year on corporate hospitality. But if they come back and they say, oh, no, all bets are off, and they're going to start asking for silly money, I think your point, Dave, it's better to have 18,000 people in there, and it's this sort of, there's a number to be done, but you get all those people in there, and they buy merchandise, they buy food, and they buy all the other stuff. So
that's the kicker, isn't it? You know,
it is.
That's where, you know, I've got no idea what the margins are on what they make on, you know, but there must be something that says the more people that are in the ground, the quicker our profits rise.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you wouldn't do it, would you? You know, you think,
there are ways around it. You could say, well, okay, the season tickets start off at this, but the more we sell, the more the price goes down. Yeah, so you could start off paying, I don't know, let's make numbers up. You could start off paying £500 for a season ticket and finish up getting it for £400 because more people have signed up to have one. Now, you've got all these affordability options. So you could say, well, look, if you can't afford £400, okay, you can pay us over 6 months or whatever the figure is, but we're not going to put, there's going to be no interest on it. The club will finance it. We won't go to a finance house to do it.
I heard someone doing that, Ian, and what they found was that no one wanted to be the first one to buy a season ticket.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. I mean,
so there's pros and cons in it, but I get the principle of it. I remember Glamorgan years ago, for their county championship, they sold season tickets for £10 each. And that was the year they won it. And the players said it was great having, you know, thousands of people watching a county championship game in midweek because it was so cheap to go. And of course, the club raked it in on the bar because you could have a beer, sat watching the cricket and all that kind of stuff. But they just made it cheap to have everyone along. So I think there's different ways of doing it. So I'm not a marketing
I think in this world we're in now, that the club have got to be bold. I mean, we're lucky we got somebody like Steve Lansdowne who can sustain the club. There's a lot of clubs, you know, who are financially in the SHIT that might not have that. So rather than, you know, than Mark Ashton waits for somebody else to blink before we make a move, you know, and market something, let's do it first. We've got the fan base out there. You know, I'm sure the fans would lobby the club and say, look, make an attractive offer and you will fill the ground again. But you are pushing against that reluctance.
I think, just to wrap up, I'm going to give the final word to the message from Albuquerque on here. He said, I think you'll find BCFC has a young family cohort who will renew willy-nilly. Many 50-year supporters like us, curmudgeons, will renew because we have City in our blood. We have City blood in our veins and we can't do anything about it. I think you're 100% right there, Albuquerque. That's pretty much how I feel. Guys, I think the season's over from a meaningful. We ain't going to go down. We ain't going to get to the playoffs now. Let's try and have some enjoyable matches between now and the end of the season. We'll be back after Saturday, which is home to QPR, which should be a win. I hope it is, because we don't want Nige to have the curse of the poor home form that we've endured for more years than we care to mention. Guys, have a great evening.
If Lansbury on the pitch, we got a chance, haven't we? Because we haven't got a point since he's been
there. Yeah, but the problem you've got is that Pearson, unless some of these guys are going to rise like Lazarus, you know, and the Liam Walshes, this world, what can he do? He can't do a lot. I mean, he might say, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll start off with Young Britain or Conway up front, or instead of Pham. But is that going to work? I don't think so. So he's going to have to take a look at how fit the players are and say, right, I'd probably start off similar-ish.
I've got to give somebody else a laugh with it. M. Garland 3 has said, we're 0-10 down for all minutes Lansbury's been on the pitch. I mean, that says it all, really, doesn't it? Guys, thanks for joining me this evening. A couple of you were belatedly. I thought Dave and I, I think we'd have managed to go on for about 40 minutes, just the two of us. But
hind legs and donkeys, Dave.
Yeah, no, it's let's hope we can get a win on Saturday. And I think it's going to be interesting with all the off the pitch stuff now between now and the end of the season. And, you know, it can't come soon enough, really, and get back in those grounds, because I can't wait. I was getting a little bit excited, you know, hoping for a win tonight, but it wasn't going to be that. Thanks to all the people that have joined us, sent your text messages in. Good audience. I was expecting fewer because things have picked up a little bit, but that's great. Thanks for all your support, and we'll see you all at the weekend. Although I think you'll be you're a weekday man now, Dave, aren't you? So we'll see you for the next one in midweek. Ian and Mark, I'll speak to you guys before, but speak to you on Saturday on the pod. And thanks to all the listeners, 2,500 plus over the last 10 days. Thanks a lot for that.
Good night, everybody. Good night, all.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, stay safe, everyone. See you soon.